What's the 411? You're tuned into 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. This edition of 411 Teen features the Florida State University's Center for Prevention and Early Intervention. The center provides direct services for at-risk, vulnerable infants, toddlers, and their families. Infant mental health, early Head Start, and home visits are some of the programs offered by the center. The center is part of the University Institute of Science and Public Affairs. This hour, I talk with the Executive Director, Dr. Mimi Graham, and the site coordinator for the new program, Young Parents Project, Gita Patel Steingart. Welcome to 411 Teen.
Thanks so much.
Yeah. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. I'll start with you, Mimi. I know you've been there a long time. How did the Center for Prevention and Early Intervention evolve or come to be?
It's a great story. As you remember, our beloved Lawton Chiles, when he was a senator, he had some hunting land in Gadsden County, and he was also on the National Infant Mortality Commission in D.C., and he noticed that Gadsden County had really high infant mortality. It still does. Mm-hmm. And so he came back and realized there was really no effort targeted on the infant deaths. And so he started the Center for Prevention and Early Intervention Policy. This was like in 86. And then he had the audacity to run for governor and leave us. And Dr. Anita Hakes took over as the director at that point. And so that's been a long time now. And but our mission has expanded, but the root is still vulnerable children and families, which is our core. So we really specialize in babies, toddlers, and their families, whether it's impoverished families, families in the child welfare system, families of teen parents. We have a new initiative called Baby Courts, which we're working with children in the dependency system. Mm-hmm. The largest age group of kids coming into child welfare are under the age of five. Mm-hmm. And the largest age group are babies before their first birthday. And so we have some really innovative programs to try to change the whole trajectory for them.
Well, where are you located? For those of us who would like to know and are listening, where is the center located?
We are in Tallahassee on Lafayette Street. We are off campus, so mm-hmm. we can have parking. That's mm-hmm. free.
That's good. And you serve Leon County, Gadsden County. Who do you serve in addition to? I know you gave the criteria of the infants and babies, but what counties are you in?
Well, we have a variety of programs, and they're in different mm-hmm. counties. And then a lot of our work is policy work that's mm-hmm. statewide.
Mm-hmm. What services, and I know you have a variety of programs, let's kind of look at these programs, at the ones that you do offer. What services do you offer?
Well, we have an early Head Start program that has been in Gadsden County for almost 20 years now. And it serves impoverished families. We have 68 pregnant women, infants and toddlers, and they get weekly home visits.
Okay. Cool.
And then that's supplemented with play groups that are two or three times a month, because a lot of the families are really isolated, and so mm-hmm. it brings them together to really learn about child development and how to, first of all, how to have a healthy pregnancy, and then secondly, really how to fall in love with their baby and make sure their baby's ready ready for school and ready for life by having a really good childhood.
Now, is that where you use the? That's where you use the curriculum, right? Because I know you're well known and respected for the curriculum that you have developed.
Yes, and that's an interesting story too.
Okay, share that with us.
And when we had one of the first federal Healthy Start programs in the 90s, and there was no prenatal curricula, so we were just like Xeroxing, you know, all these articles and spending a lot of time. And so we decided we'd do kind of a cookbook approach of, you know, putting it all together. Then our colleagues, you know, they wanted it. And so now we just passed the $10 million mark of sales of the curriculum, over 3,500 programs across the nation and even internationally. The city of Paris uses it and the Defense Department, their family program uses it. So so it's widely used across the nation. And
excuse me for interrupting. Now, it's composed of a series of books, right?
It is.
Yeah. Would you share that? I mean, it's before pregnancy, pregnancy, infants, toddlers. I'm not quite sure. I don't remember quite well. But
and it's a series of five books from pregnancy to age three. So at each developmental stage, home visitors can help parents with whatever are the issues of that developmental period with a child.
Okay. So you're looking at, with this curriculum, is it focused on particular topics that you want to accomplish or inform the? Because I'm just going back on my memory, which is bad, okay? But for example, I know you had one that kind of dealt with low birth rates and deal. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
But it's really comprehensive. That's one of the things. And we did focus groups, and we found that women really wanted like magazine-style handouts. So they're colorful handouts, and it's research-based. So our specialization is we really translate the research into practice. And so we take complicated issues like brain development or attachment theory and boil it down into what parents can do at home to enhance those things.
Okay. As far as focuses, do you look at breastfeeding?
Absolutely.
Okay. So what's been your position on breastfeeding?
Well, it's one of the most important things that we can do, and our studies have shown the more that our home visitors talk to mom about breastfeeding, even some of the teens that I'm never going to breastfeed, you know, when you convince them of, you know, how good it is for the baby and how good it is for the environment and developing the immunities. And there's research now that shows there's higher IQ of babies that are breastfed. Mm-hmm. They do better in school. I mean, there's just, a whole laundry list of reasons why we should breastfeed. So our research has shown the more they talk about it, the more likely they are to breastfeed. So we're really changing the breastfeeding rates. One of our program has a 97% rate of breastfeeding. It's pretty amazing.
That's pretty amazing.
Yes.
That's fantastic. Yes. Okay. What about intake and referral? We're talking about these things, these programs that are available. There may be someone who, you know, would take advantage or could take advantage of it. I mean, how do they become involved in your program? I mean, can they walk in off the street? Do they have to have a referral?
They can walk in off the street. Our office is in Quincy, downtown Quincy. There's a big sign that says FSU Early Head Start Program. They could also call us on the phone, 850-922-1300.
And, say that again?
850-922-1300.
Okay. Who are your clients? And I know you've talked about, you know, certain populations that you tend to deal with, high at risk. But when I say who, I'm looking at, so often when we talk about infants and early childhood, we're talking about the mother. What role does the father play? Is there any place for males in this program?
Absolutely. And we don't get babies without the daddies.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know,
yeah.
So we really do a lot of outreach to ensure that the father of the baby is involved, because all the research shows that when the dad is involved, there are much better outcomes for the children, barring the few outlier dads.
Right. Oh, what's the criteria for participation? I mean, is there a checklist that the individual has to meet as far as characteristics that would determine whether you would be eligible? Because I guess to some degree what we're talking about is a level of dysfunction. And dysfunction does not really have to be anything negative. I don't even mean that negative connotation. But there may be often your actual client may be someone who has not been parented themselves. So how can you expect them to know how to parent if they weren't parent? I mean, you know, we go to school and we have classes for everything, but there are no classes for parents. We really don't take classes before we become parents.
Absolutely.
You know.
So our criteria is that the families must live in Gadsden County. They must either be expecting a child or have a child under 3 years of age and be willing to provide their income information. And they must make less than the federal poverty guidelines. So we also prioritize kids with disabilities. So,
okay.
And so they can call us for an application.
Okay. And now, is there any cost involved?
Absolutely not. It's a federal program, so it is no cost to the families.
And as far as the curriculum, how does one access that? I know they're in books, but is it digital or are there apps for it? I mean, someone may hear that and think, wow, you know, my daughter or whomever, you know, could really benefit from that.
Yes, you can order it on our website, which is www.cpeip.fsu.edu. So it's the Center for Prevention and Early Intervention Policy. Or they can just – the title of our books are called Partners for Healthy Babies. So you can just Google that. And we are really excited that we are showcasing a new digital version this December. And so we're very excited that now you can be able to have a handheld tablet and to home visitors can use it to say, okay, well, this family has these risk factors or these mm-hmm. issues they're trying to deal with, and it can then tell you what would be helpful, what are the strategies, the research-based strategies that would be helpful to deal with those issues.
Oh, I would think that would be really beneficial. If you're just tuning in, you're tuned in to 411 Teen. This hour, I'm talking with Dr. Mimi Graham, the Executive Director of the Center for Prevention and Early Intervention, and Geeta Patel-Steingart. She is the site coordinator for Young Parents Program, or Young Parents Project, which we will address very shortly. We're going to take a brief break, but you just wait and we'll be right back. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and we are really featuring the Center for Prevention and Early Intervention. We had to take a brief break, but I'm getting right back to it. And Mimi, would you distinguish, I know you talked about home visits, you talked about early Head Start, and you also mentioned the baby corps. So I wanted to have you to elaborate on that and share with us just what that is and what it involves. I have not forgotten you, Geeta. We're going to get to you because your program is really, I know, really on the horizon. It's really just getting started. So one here, we're going to spend a lot of time on that. Okay.
Great. Well, as our learning has evolved, we've made quantum steps in understanding early childhood and brain development and trauma. And there are so many myths about early childhood. We used to think babies didn't feel pain. They didn't even get anesthesia when they had surgery. And now we have a lot of research about cortisol and showing that babies really do feel pain. And so trauma does reverberate within the system and only exacerbates over time when it's not healed. And so one of the things that that we specialize is in infant mental health. And that's we train licensed mental health folks to have an expertise in young children. And as you can imagine, young kids often don't have the words to tell us that they're being abused or neglected, their needs are not being met.
Their behavior.
Through their behavior, yes. And we often misinterpret their mm-hmm. bad behavior as, you know, bad instead of looking for the underlying emotional needs.
Trying to tell us something.
You know, we had a little boy who bit 27 times one day, and most programs would kick out a toddler like that. Well, we found out that both of his parents were in jail. He lived with the elderly grandmother, and he was biting because he didn't have the words to say my emotional needs mm-hmm. are not being met. Mm-hmm. So when we started giving him lots of attention, you know, the biting stopped. And so many of our young children's behaviors are really not understood. They either mm-hmm. medicate them for mm-hmm. ADHD, or they expel them from preschool or from kindergarten. And so we're really, our expertise is in young children. And so it's taking people who already have good clinical skills and helping them to see the behavior and really the underlying emotional needs. And this is especially needed in DCF and child welfare.
Mm-hmm. And I would guess that that kind of information to some degree would be involved in the Young Parents Project, right?
Oh, yes. Yes. You know, we work with teens that are court involved. So they are in the delinquency system here in Tallahassee. In our Miami program, they're also in the they were also in the dependency system. So we have a lot of work with the teens around the court involvement.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, talking to the judges, mm-hmm. talking with the state attorney's office. We have good working relationships with Department of Juvenile Justice so that we can, you know, look at the teen as, you know, what's happened to them, not, you know, not just punishing them for right. what they've done.
I would think a core component of this would be education.
Okay.
You know, education, Mimi, you talked about the education of just even your mental health workers, but I'm talking about the education of the community, of the family, because mm-hmm. if you know that maybe his crying has something else, is telling me something else, and just for example, mothers becoming sensitive to the different types of cries are mm-hmm. sensitive to what we may see as acting out behavior, which really is not acting out. It's like, I'm trying to tell you something, and I don't know how to tell you any other way. So mm-hmm. helping them to be aware of exactly what this type of behavior may indicate.
Yes, right. And for a teen parent, that's particularly important mm-hmm. to learn because like you were saying before, and Mimi was saying, a lot of the teens have not been parented to right. the extent that they're able to read their children, their baby's cues appropriately mm-hmm. Or label them as, quote, bad when they do something wrong, and not really understanding what their child's needs are and what they're really asking for. And that's a lot of the intervention that we do with the teen and their baby as a home visiting program, you know, literally getting on the floor with mm-hmm. the teen and the baby in play mm-hmm. and teaching the teen how to play and interact with the child and how important that is to attachment and development for the baby. But also, again, learn, you know, the teen most likely is not had the ability or the opportunity to play in her life.
Right.
So it's beneficial for the teen as well.
And I pose this question to both of you. In looking at the programs and the populations that you serve, what role does culture play in your interaction and your assessment? Just what is the role of culture, have you found?
The role of culture is huge. That's something that, you know, as you know, as counselors, as, you know, in our program, we have nurse educators. You know, we are all cultural competency is something that is always in the forefront of our mind and our, you know, discussing the, you know, the families mm-hmm. and what the needs are of the families and respecting where they – where the families are coming from culturally and, the you know, the maybe the cultural differences that – could be occurring that we need to be sensitive of.
There's also a culture of poverty, you mm-hmm. know, and intergenerational yeah. poverty, mm-hmm. and particularly in Gadsden County where we ask teens about their dreams and they don't even have a dream, you know, and mm-hmm. their parents, I mean, it's multi-generational. So part of what we're bringing is hope and helping them to graduate from high school, helping mm-hmm. them if they're pregnant to have a healthy baby and then not to have a rapid second pregnancy, which we know mm-hmm. curtails school graduation and life's dreams and almost, you know, and you know, defines at least a short-term life of poverty.
Let's be real. it sets them up.
It sets them up for failure. Yeah. So really helping them to see the consequences of their decision and helping to nurture and parent them like they've never been. So it's really awesome to watch them blossom and, Gita explained they've been involved with the courts. We have one situation that I think.
So are they, excuse me for interrupting you, but I mean, are they ordered by the court? How do you get them?
Well, we accept referrals from the Department of Juvenile Justice. So the teens in our program, and they're teen girls that we work with between the ages of 13 and 18 at intake. So we would receive a referral from Department of Juvenile Justice that the teen is either on probation or what's called minimum risk commitment, and they would refer them to our program as a Department of Juvenile Justice service provider. Our program cannot be court mandated just because of the research aspects to our program with Florida State University, but a judge can mm-hmm. order a parenting program for a teen parent, and then the referral can come to us as the only home visiting parenting program in Tallahassee, or we service Gadsden County as well.
But it is voluntary.
It is voluntary on the part of the teen to participate with us.
And most all these teens have extensive history of trauma, not just one or two traumatic mm-hmm. events in their lives, but really a lifetime of complex trauma. And we're really turning around their lives. One of the girls had like two pages of a rap sheet of, you know, and she was going to be put in a residential program in Orlando or something. And then if she'd had the baby would have been given up for DCF because mm-hmm. she was serving this time. So we asked the judge for a therapeutic sentence for her to be able to come to our program. We found out that she was raped when she was 7. She never got any kind of counseling. Was she angry? Yes. Did she do drugs to numb the pain? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, and so with the therapeutic sentence, the first thing we did was get her in sexual abuse counseling for the first time in her life and to address her trauma, to help her graduate from high school, which she did, and then she had the baby. And mm-hmm. so it totally changed her trajectory by finally, you know, healing her childhood trauma. We've got so many people walking around with bad behaviors, which are really a way of coping with their trauma. Mm-hmm. And then we're re-traumatizing them through the system. So we really believe if we can get to the babies and when they've been abused or neglected or had trauma and provide them the trauma treatment, and that's what infant mental health is about, mm-hmm. then we can stop this intergenerational cycle. And they don't have to go through this lifetime of doing drugs and all of the coping mechanisms that are really unhealthy.
And that's why I really ask you about the significance of culture, because I know that is a major barrier. You're doing these home visits and you're going in and showing them another way of doing things. Mm-hmm. And that other way of doing things is not the way my grandmother told me. Mm-hmm. That's not what I've been doing. And you're coming in here and you're telling me this, you know, why should I believe this? That's why I was, you know, really mm-hmm. asking that. I mean, you do a lot of good work. And share with the listening audience how to contact you.
They can contact us by calling our office number, which is 850-922-1300. Or you can look on our website. You can and Young Parents Project, Partners for Healthy Baby, FSU Center for Prevention, and find us.
Okay. Now, you mentioned, I know they have a, and we won't talk a lot about this, a program in South Florida, right? And so this is the second one, am I correct?
Yes.
Okay. The other one was about 6 years old or so.
Correct.
Yes. It originated in 2005.
Okay. All right. Are there similarities or dissimilarities? I mean, is it the same, basically the same thing? I mean, I guess that even the populations that they deal with may be different.
The populations.
And that may create.
Yes. The populations mm-hmm. vary a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the vicinity of being in a big city as opposed to mm-hmm. a smaller area like Tallahassee.
And ethnicity even.
Yes.
Ethnicity and race would mm-hmm. make a major difference there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. But other than that, the program is the same model. It's the same program.
And it has a home visit component to it?
Yes. Okay. Yes. All of the the infant. We have infant mental health counselors who we are all master's level counselors or even licensed mental health counselors. Mm-hmm. I myself am a licensed mental health counselor, and we have another woman down in the Miami project who's also licensed. And we have nurse educators who also are involved who are also part of the team in the program. So we all provide home visiting services to the teens and the families, the teens and the babies and mm-hmm. the families.
And it's really the nurse's role to help the teen have a healthy pregnancy mm-hmm. and then to plan the rest of her family, her subsequent family. And then the mental health specialist's role is to work on the trauma issues. And then we have a social worker who helps navigate the court system and keep them in school and really help them. Many of them are couch surfing. They don't have a mm-hmm. home. And so all of the concrete needs that teens have and really hand-holding them through the court system, it's a very scary place to be. Mm-hmm. And so we're really holding the teen and modeling for her the respect and caring for her so that she can do similarly for her baby.
Regardless of what the program may be, whether it's home visit, early healthy start, infant mental health, YPP, there has to be some interfacing with the community. How do you do that?
Well, we have community partners okay. that we do meet with. That's something as my role as site coordinator is to meet the community providers and have a face-to-face meeting so that, you know, so that we can learn about what they do and they can learn about what we do mm-hmm. and how we can, you know, again, keep adding more support to the team that we work as a team for these families. And the more supports in the community that we gather, the better it is for this teen family to be able to maybe transition to or refer to once they've successfully completed our program, because we never want to leave a teen family with no services, because we understand that even when our time is completed with them, we still want to leave them with community resources.
Like the schools are a really important
yes.
partner because teen moms often drop out of school and they are failing academically. Some of them are really struggling with mm-hmm. the GED. So working closely to get them in the second chance school, getting mm-hmm. them the uniforms, mm-hmm. getting them their books, and really helping them navigate, you know, the process of being in school and having a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mimi, you have been, you know, around for a long time with this program, and I have to ask you, when you think about all the years, what has been the most challenging component of it?
I think it's been a long time since we've had any state leadership in terms of caring about children and caring not just with talk but with advocating for funding since Lawton Childs was our last real child advocate in the governor's office. And Florida has given back federal monies for home visiting for pregnant women because of – you know, they didn't like the Affordable Care Act or whatever the source of the dollars were. And so we're so far behind other states in terms of our early childhood maternal child health system because our legislators and state leadership has not really had drank the Kool-Aid of early childhood and the benefits.
What does the future hold? Where do you see us going?
Well, we're really excited. Most of the innovative work that's happened for children in the state has happened at the local level because of leadership. And our baby courts, we're really excited about. So what that's doing is we're bringing our infant mental health folks to the courts. A lot of the judges, they don't know what to do with babies. Okay. And so they don't know whether to reunify them with the family, how the baby's doing. And so when we have a person whose job it is, their specialization is to, you know, to really assess the parent-child relationship, they can really inform the judge so he can make really scientific, much more informed decisions about what's the best course for this baby and for this family. So we're really bringing early childhood resources to the court. The majority of the kids coming in are for neglect. And so these kids need the Early Head Start program and the Healthy Start services and the quality child care and the resources that we know about. So there's been a real disconnect between the courts and our early childhood system. So it seems like a real natural linkage to just connect the dots. It doesn't cost anything, and it's just a win-win-win all the way around. So we're really excited that we have over 22 judges around the state.
Hold your thoughts for a minute. We're going to take a brief break. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and this hour we are talking with FSU's Center for Prevention and Early Intervention. What observations have you all made in reference to the mortality rates? I wanted to address that, particularly in Gadsden County. They just seem to be off the charts. I can't believe. I looked them up before I came in, and I was like, is this right? It can't be. But, for example, in Gadsden County, the black infant mortality rate was 23.3. as compared to the white one, which was 4.8. Do you have any observations as to what's going on? I mean, even at the state level, the black infant mortality rate is 10.6. And we're talking about twice that much. What is happening?
Well, there's a lot of research now on the impact of stress and trauma in pregnancy. And we know now that stress elevates the stress hormone cortisol, and it can actually cross the placenta from the mother to the baby. And so that's one thing that we're having, you know, lower birth weight babies. There's also a racial disparity in, you know, babies born low birth weight. Mm-hmm. And then the other things with infant mortality are SIDS and smoking. smoking in the house and those kinds of things.
Smoking's still a problem.
Smoking is still – I still pass cars where there's a baby in the car seat and everybody's smoking in the car. But I think it's the stress, and I think it's the intergenerational stress and poverty that's really that perpetuates the infant mortality. And it's not about going to more prenatal visits. I think we've been looking down the wrong rabbit hole in terms of what are the causes of infant mortality. And all of us parents have needed help during the when we had a baby. But I think particularly women who are single women and who are women in poverty struggle at every juncture with not having enough food and paying the rent and all of those stresses, healthcare. You know, and health care take its toll. So I wish we could have a real jobs program and a real comprehensive program in Gadsden County that would focus on these women, educating them. I don't know if you remember, Liz, but a number of years ago, we did a dollar a day to help teens not get pregnant. And what they did was to pool their money together and really create a support group, and they would go to dinner. And it gave them a sense of community and hope and dreams. And I think that we need to put on our thinking caps and think outside the box in terms of what would really, you know, address the needs in Gadsden County.
And that's why I was asking you about the culture, because a part of some cultures, having babies is not a negative, you know, component. That's not negative. I mean, it's okay because grandma will take care of the baby. Our mom will take care of the baby. And they don't see it because it is generational. My mom had me at 15. Why not? Having a baby at 14 or 15 is not that big of a deal, where they really don't have a firm grasp for the real impact it has on their lives or their baby's lives.
Someone said hope is the best contraceptive there is. You know,
well, how do you instill hope? I mean, if you're in that environment and you don't see hope around you, I mean, what do you do? And that's why I asked you, because you all have been around a while, so you're doing something.
Well, some of our colleagues in L.A., they have a dream school, and so they took the kids, the, you know, toughest kids, and they brought in, you know, Martin Luther King's grandson and Jacques Cousteau and different people to just inspire them to have a dream that they could do something in their life, that they could really, you know, escape the multigenerational poverty that has perhaps become comfortable for their
community. And that might be a way of interfacing with the community because, you know, the Martin Luther Kings and all of them are good, but they're not – that's too far away.
Right.
You know what I mean? You need somebody that's in your community. You need whomever, the doctor, you know, who works there in the hospital.
And our mayor, Andrew Gillum, and all the wonderful people.
That they really have access to, I would think. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there to be, you know, extremely successful.
But we're still really trying to help people understand how important early childhood is. I mean, a lot of people think, oh, well, babies won't remember. It really doesn't matter what happened to them. And we have so much research now that shows that it really is the foundation of the rest of their life. And if you have a strong early childhood, I mean, 85% of the brain is developed by age three. So it's such an important time. And if we do it right, then it really sets the trajectory for the rest of their lives.
That early intervention is very important.
And that's why I think with the Young Parents Project, where it's a unique program in that we can actually go into the home and, you know, and talk about these myths and try to maybe dispel some of them that, like you said, you know, well, that's how my mother raised me and this is how my grandmother raised her. But what do you want for your child? And most of the time when we ask a teen mother, what do you want for your child? more than 90% of the time, she's going to say, I want a better life for my child than I had for myself. So then we can expand on that. Well, then how can you help your child to have a better life? And what can you do to change that?
What kind of things would you change?
Yes. Yeah, right. That maybe the what about the way you were parented, or maybe the way you saw your mother being parented? Would you like to change so that can impact your child to have a better life? Part of the intervention that we also do, you know, education is very important to our program, and making sure that all of our teen girls are enrolled in, you know, and get a high school diploma. And, you know, like I said, we're all master's level, you know, master's level education people, mm-hmm. so that we can, you know, bring them to the FSU campus and let's go look at it. Let's go tour. Let's go see what a college looks like. Let's go talk to people that, you know, are in college. And most of them don't have that experience. They've never had anyone in their family who's graduated from high school or gone to college. So, you know, just giving them that other perspective, I think that helps to instill the hope in them that, oh, there is something I can actually achieve, and I can do better for myself and my child.
And we've had some real success stories. One of our mm-hmm. early Head Start moms was a foster child, and she got pregnant, as 50% of girls in foster care get pregnant, mm-hmm. and they're the least capable of being parents. They do, and they have no idea what they're getting into. But anyway, we started working with her with Early Head Start, helped her finish her high school degree, and then she just graduated from FSU. And
oh, wow.
So, you know, we
fantastic.
Love those kinds of
yeah.
stories. But
yeah.
you need the research says if you have one person that believes in you, that you can overcome great odds. And mm-hmm. so, you know, we not only believe in them, but we hold them. We hold their hand through the different stages and different obstacles so they can have a better life for themselves and, mm-hmm. and their child.
How long can one participate? I mean, is it a specific time frame that one can participate in the YPP program? How does that work?
Well, in our program, you know, our program is modeled after the Yale University Minding the Baby program. And they talk about, you know, really to be able to get the quality of the program, we really would like the teens to be in the program for at least 1 to 2 years. So with girls that are on probation, our contract with Department of Juvenile Justice, you know, does state that they can remain in our program as long as they are on probation. So okay. once they're removed from probation, though, they also have the opportunity to remain in our program on a voluntary basis for that 1 to 2 year period of time. So for us, we would prefer that they stay – the longer that they stay in our program, the better for themselves and for their children.
And it may be too early to even ask this, but have you developed a kind of follow-up program to see what happens down the road, where they go, what, you know?
Well, she first might want to tell you about the outcomes that we've okay. had, both from Miami. Well, you want to talk about the ones here?
Well, the Tallahassee program here has been in existence since September 2012. Okay. So we're relatively new yeah. in Tallahassee. But our first year outcomes, we did see a decrease in recidivism with the girls in our program, so that they did not go on to commit another juvenile offense.
Okay. And what kind of decrease do you know stats?
In the first year, in out of 23 teens, there is only one. So that is a very significant decrease. And we also have we also saw a decrease in subsequent births, which is
that's another
very
point.
Important for mm-hmm. teens to not have that rapid subsequent birth of another child, because, like Mimi was saying, it decreases their their options. So here in the first year program, we had zero, which is a very significant outcome. And then for our education outcome, you know, at the time of intake, 48% of the teens were not enrolled in school, and then at and had not graduated. But of the remaining, the rest of them, once they were in the program, they did. Two-thirds were enrolled in high school and were on track with grade level up to almost 60%.
Now, is there a criterion that's set up that that they have to maintain while they're in the program, or no?
No.
Are they just kind of mentoring them, providing them with services, the support, motivation, whatever,
yes,
that they need to stay in the program?
Yes. It's not a mandate for them, mm-hmm, but we're pretty relentless mm-hmm when it comes to education because we know how important it is, especially for a girl to have an education in this country, and that's something that we take very seriously. So it's not a mandate, but if they're not enrolled in school, then we'll be on them until they're enrolled mm-hmm somewhere. And mm-hmm that's not just for them, but, you know, getting the children enrolled in childcare is another aspect that's important to our program.
How does that work? I mean, does everybody is eligible for childcare, or at what point can mm-hmm the infant go to childcare? Can you share information about that?
Well, here in Leon County, if a teen girl is enrolled in Leon County school, then they are able to participate in what's called the TAP program, the Teenage Parent Program. So we do recommend that highly for any teen parent enrolled in who's in high school or middle school, any Leon County school. And at that point, so that the teen is provided with the ability to go to school, know that her child is being provided with free, quality child care, and that they're both provided with transportation to and from school. So that's very important because, you know, especially here in Tallahassee, transportation can be an issue for teen parents.
Is there a financial incentive? Do they receive any finances being involved in the program?
Not per se, no. Mm-hmm. Not financial incentives, but we do give you know, developmentally appropriate gifts for the babies. Every month they'll receive, developmentally appropriate books. You know, reading literacy is another is something that we do with the teens and teaching them the importance of reading to their children and how that helps their children form language and, you know, get ready for school for themselves. And then we also can provide the teen with assistance with, like nursing needs that they might need for themselves, for their health and mm-hmm for their baby's health.
Florida is unique in having a law that as long as teens stay in school, they are entitled to free child care mm-hmm and transportation and support services. And that was all to, encourage mm-hmm graduation because we know if you graduate, you can make more money and you have a lot more options. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of supports in place all over Florida pregnant teens. So,
that's
yes.
good for Florida.
Yes.
And I know part of it is helping them to appreciate and respect the bond between mother and child. Mm-hmm. And in our last few minutes, can we talk a little bit about that and how you maintain that with your clients and their children, helping them to establish that?
Well, the bond, like you said, is very important, and that is something that that our home visitors will work with the teen parents, with the baby. And like I said, you know, it's really bringing toys, mm-hmm, to the home, to the visit, and teaching the importance of play, of reading to their children, taking care of their child, with their immunizations, even sometimes how to hold their child, mm-hmm, and you know, all the bonding moments. Also, having that infant mental health approach is, you know, about, you know, the relationship between the mom and the baby, and always keeping that at the forefront and helping the teen to understand, you know, to always keep their baby in mind for with any choice that they make in their life.
So in essence, what I hear you saying is that the YPP program teaches mothers how to effectively navigate their environment, their milieu. That's what we're talking about, right?
Yes, and we also help them fall in love with their baby and delight in their baby and really use the relationship with their baby as the vehicle for change. Mm-hmm. They all want to have a better life for their baby. Mm-hmm. And so it's a real deterrent from other crime. It's an incentive to graduate. So we really utilize the relationship as the incentive and to help them see every decision they make affects the baby. You're going to have your electricity turned off? How's that going to affect the baby? You're going to go out and party all night and come back home and not be here? How's your baby going to be? So really having a lens of always thinking about how their decisions are going to not only affect them, but to affect their baby. So it's really this dual.
Choices.
Yes.
We
yes.
are really talking about choices that appear to be the key for helping them, again, to maintain and to be successful in this environment. Well, you know, time flies. I look up and it's like, we're at the end, but I just want to extend to you my sincere appreciation. I think the information that you have shared has been invaluable. To my listening audience, I invite you to tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available. And if you want to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Team podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.